The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
She speaks her mind. She makes me laugh. And you know what? She's right most of the time. Marjorie Taylor Greene joins me on the podcast. There's a new development in the January 6th business suggesting the FBI may have had, big surprise, a much greater involvement than previously suspected. The New York Times says that Russia and China are practicing internet censorship. Guess who these clowns are leaving out? And also, I'm going to show how the removal of a Jefferson statue proves that Gulliver is losing his battle against the Lilliputians. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
These days, it's a really surreal experience for me to read the New York Times, which used to be at one time a real newspaper. Many years ago, for Policy Review, I wrote an article on the New York Times focusing on its executive editor, Abe Rosenthal, and how scrupulous Rosenthal was to kind of fairly assess how to cover events around the world. He himself had been a distinguished correspondent. But reading the New York Times now, it's just difficult to get behind to the psychology of the people who write the articles because they live in a kind of never-never land. And here's an article. This is just a sample of what I'm talking about. This is an extensive article in the Times about how censorship is getting really bad on the internet in Russia, almost as bad as China. And the Times goes through all these details, basically a very negative tone. The Russians are trying to block the internet. They're trying to take unpopular voices off. They're trying to stifle dissent. And they're taking a cue from the Chinese. No mention. I mean, and this is the sort of dog that doesn't bark. No mention at all that the New York Times and other leftist organs are pushing for vigorous censorship in America. They're not just pushing for censorship on the digital platforms. They want the digital platforms to turn over that function to the government. This is the point of the Facebook whistleblower. Why let Mark Zuckerberg decide who to censor? Why don't we let Joe Biden decide, in effect? Now, let's look at this article in the Times because it keeps sort of beckoning us to the American analogy, but the American analogy is really never made. Russia is censoring the internet. Russian authorities want Twitter to remove 3,000, quote, illegal posts, the posts that the Russian authorities claim is, yes, disinformation. Authorities are starting to have startling new powers to block, filter, and slow down websites they don't want people to see. Sound familiar? They're talking about this being the world's most ambitious digital censorship. And they say, quote, Russia's censorship model can quickly be replicated by other authoritarian governments. Again, no mention of the quasi-authoritarian government we have in Washington now. The Russians evidently have these technology blockers that kind of sit in between the internet and the Russian user. And what do? They basically kind of surf through websites and they remove programming that they don't want people to see. They say that before this is the New York Times waxing nostalgic, online culture has brimmed with activism, dark humor, and foreign content. Evidently, the Russians are now shutting that stuff down. And then they quote a Russian woman, I was born in the era of the super free internet, and now I'm seeing it collapsing. Hey, you and I could say exactly the same thing. We saw at one time a free internet where you could speak openly, but that is not the internet that we have now. The people who control, you may almost say the canals that go out to the ocean are blocking them. Russia's censorship efforts have faced little resistance. I would say the same is by and large true here, although conservatives are finally in vigorous ways starting to push back. And then they quote this guy, Michael McFaul. I've seen this guy over on Twitter. He's an absolute doofus. He used to be the American ambassador to Russia, I think in the Obama administration. He goes, "It's striking that this," meaning internet censorship, "hasn't gotten the attention of the Biden administration." Yeah, probably because they're vigorously trying to do their own censorship. They're like, "Let's censor that guy. Oh, the Russians, don't bother us with what the Russians are doing. We're trying to do the same thing. Well, maybe we can get some tips from them." So this McFaul guy is like living in his own little bubble. You know, "It's surprising that the Biden people don't know, but they should be speaking vigorously out against it." Then they say internet access is increasingly used as an instrument of political power. Again, yes, and we see that here in the United States. In recent years, governments in India, Myanmar, Ethiopia, and elsewhere have used internet blackouts to stifle pockets of dissent. So all of this, you know, again, if you run and go into a time warp, we used to talk like this about other countries. You know, they're shutting down political dissent. Political prisoners are sitting in dark rooms without access to lawyers. Their trials are indefinitely delayed. But, you know, that was Venezuela, that was Cuba, that was Ethiopia, that was Sri Lanka. Now, all those features of repression are now, I would say, either they've arrived here fully or they're on their way. They're part of our own landscape. We have completely, we here, meaning, of course, the Biden administration, the U.S. government, has completely lost the moral high ground. And so the sheer kind of moral blindness of the New York Times, the irony that here they are, these governments are doing this, these governments are doing that, forgetting that all those exact same features can be found in our government, a government that, as it turns out, the New York Times routinely cheers for and supports. Guys, together we have helped to build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. Mike Lindell is grateful. He has an amazing offer for my listeners on his standard pillows. You'll get the standard MyPillow regularly $69.98 for $19.98. I'm not kidding. These wonderful pillows won't go flat. You can wash and dry them as often as you want. They maintain their shape. They're made in the USA. The pillows come with a 10-year warranty, so you know it's going to last, and a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. It's time to start getting the quality sleep that we not only want, but need. You'll also get, by the way, deep discounts on all the MyPillow products, MyPillow towels, mattress topper, the MyPillow robes, the MySlippers, and much more. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh to get the standard pillow for just $19.98. Call 1-800-876-0227. Again, 1-800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. Be sure to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I want to talk about a bombshell new article in Revolver News. Congrats again to Darren Beatty, the editor, which focuses on a very suspicious event that occurred right before January 6th. In fact, it occurred starting on January 5th, continued on January 6th. Now, Congressman Thomas Massie played this video for Merrick Garland when the Attorney General was testifying. I want you to see a part of it. Listen.
In fact, tomorrow, I don't even like to say it because I'll be arrested.
Well, let's not say it.
We need to go, I'll say it.
All right.
We need to go in to the Capitol.
Let's go!
So I'm going to put it out there. I'm probably going to go to jail for it. Tomorrow, we need to go into the Capitol. Into the Capitol.
What?
Wow. Think of how eye-opening this is. You basically have a guy starting January 5th, egging people, egging Trumpsters. We got to storm the Capitol. We got to go in. We got to go in. And people don't want to do it. And you can see they suspect and they shout out, he's a Fed. He's part of the FBI. He's either an FBI agent himself or he's an informant. And of course, Merrick Garland faced with this, you know, you could see he was very evasive. He wasn't even looking at Congressman Massey. And of course, he gives the standard answer. I can't give any information about federal involvement in January 6th. But now you're beginning to see, you know, visually, you put these clues together. It's very obvious that the feds are running a January 6th operation. Now, let's look at this guy, and here's where the Revolver expose comes in. He is Ray Epps. Now, Revolver didn't name him. The New York Times had named him earlier in an article. But this guy, Ray Epps, he lives in Arizona. He's one of the leaders of the so-called Oath Keepers, and he's a very apparently close associate of Stuart Rhodes, who is the head of the Oath Keepers. Now, here's something very interesting. Right after January 6th, this video, of course, existed. The FBI knows all about it. And initially, they put out the word, we're trying to find this guy. We're trying to identify him. We're trying to see who he is. And, of course, left-wing sleuths went to work, and they were able very quickly to do all kinds of matching, and they were able to chase this guy down. And they're like, yeah, we got him. It's this guy, Ray Epps, one of the Oath Keepers. And so the FBI promptly stuck Ray Epps prominently on the FBI most wanted list. They were desperate to get this guy because he was clearly a, well, you could see, an instigator of the storming of the Capitol. Then nothing happened. The FBI did not, in fact, go after Epps, even though his identity was known. In many cases, his location was known. And yet they never arrested him. They never evidently searched him. So he's on the FBI most wanted list, but he's just sort of sitting there. And meanwhile, you know, the FBI is going after a mom here, a grandmom there, somebody who, quote, paraded in the Capitol, took a selfie. So these people are being locked up. And meanwhile, Stuart Rhodes, the head of the Oath Keepers, the guy who's actively involved in every aspect of the storming of the Capitol, giving instructions. He's, in fact, the basis of the conspiracy charges against other people who say the FBI was, they were in communication with Stuart Rhodes. But Stuart Rhodes has never been arrested. Stuart Rhodes has never been charged. And the same is true of Ray Epps. Now, interestingly, when the Revolver News broke the story and basically goes, what's happening with this guy, Ray Epps? What's happening with Stuart Rhodes? What does the FBI do? Without a word, they delete him. They delete his name from the most wanted list. Suddenly, he's no longer wanted. He's not only no longer the most wanted, he's no longer wanted at all. And if you think about it, try to ask yourself why the feds would do this. There's really only one plausible explanation. There's only one I can think of. And that's this. FBI agents and FBI informants never work alone. It is unlikely that Stuart Rhodes himself and by himself was the FBI man inside the Oath Keepers. Most likely the FBI had multiple people. In fact, we know this from the Whitmer operation, where the FBI had, 12 inside people trying to arrest even less than 12 people who are supposedly the conspirators. So the FBI has more people, their own guys, in the operation than were actually, quote, involved in the operation at all. And so it wouldn't be surprising if not only Stuart Rhodes, but also Ray Epps. So you see what's going on. They said Trump instigated this. Trump made them do it. But here you see a guy not saying, let's march peacefully and patriotic. Let's go in the Capitol. I might be arrested for this. But of course, he knows if he's an FBI informant, he's not going to be arrested for it. But all you suckers are going to be arrested for it. So you can see the enormous power of this. Well, it's circumstantial evidence, but circumstantial evidence refers to the circumstances of January 6th. And you can see the Biden administration doing its level best to hide this. This is part of the reason they don't want the documents out. They don't want the footage out. What they really don't want you to know is not the extent of, well, you know, what did Republicans do? What did Trump do? The most important thing is, what did the FBI do? What did they do? After taking Balance of Nature, Debbie and I have noticed an increase in energy. It's great. And for Debbie, regularity was a problem. It was solved by this, their fiber and spice. Now, we love taking Balance of Nature because we can't possibly eat the correct servings of fruits and veggies every day. So for us, this makes sense. In fact, our technical director, Brian, got curious about Balance of Nature, so we had him try it. He's here, and he says it gives him a renewed burst of energy. Brian, would you pop your head in? Would you confirm what I'm saying?
Every day, I don't seem to need that extra cup of coffee in the middle of the afternoon, or I'm not looking for an energy drink at 4 o'clock to try and get home. So it's right.
It works. It's awesome. We take 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies, all in 6 small capsules. Absolutely no trouble swallowing. Always fresh. Nothing artificial. They smell great. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the balance of nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first balance of nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. Guys, I'm always delighted to welcome back to the podcast the one and only Marjorie Taylor Greene. So much going on, Marjorie. Welcome. Thanks for joining me. Let me start with this kind of verbal scuffle that you're having with AOC. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez apparently thinks that she wants to have congressmen and congresswomen arrested for supposedly talking to January 6th protesters. And you fired back at her and challenged her to a debate. Talk a little bit. I mean, first of all, it must be an odd experience to deal with this kind of overgrown infant because, you know, she acts in such a kind of immature manner. What's it like for you to cross swords with AOC?
Well, actually, I think overgrown infant is a really good way to describe her, Dinesh. She's disconnected from reality. She's a big hypocrite, right? So AOC, vectoring all of the BLM riots of 2020 that were riots actually pointed towards innocent Americans, private businesses, and American cities. She was the one that was telling them how to so-called protest, telling them what to wear, telling them to pull their hair back, bring a snack with them, have an ID on them, and have a friend's phone number that they can call in case they have problems. In other words, in case they get arrested for the type of riots, she called them protests, that they were doing. AOC also is the one that brought in a huge group of hundreds of students and protested and completely disrupted and broke all the rules outside Nancy Pelosi's office when she was a freshman member of Congress. So you see, AOC, she is disruptive. She's the one that does all these things that she points her fingers at Republicans for. And then she's calling out and saying we should be arrested, when really AOC is the one that supported domestic terrorism and private cities that burned down city blocks, burned down private businesses, killed Americans, and really was the true attack in our country, what I would call a civil war. AOC and the rest of the Democrats funded it on Act Blue. Funded BLM on Act Blue, the Democrat fundraising platform. And so AOC is really the one that should be investigated and held accountable, as well as Ilhan Omar, Kamala Harris, and many others, Maxine Waters, that were the ones that were inciting violence on innocent Americans. And so that's why I called her out. And, you know, I'll continue to do so.
Marjorie, if you go back, you know, 10 years, you would find that you have extremists in the Democratic Party who are out there, but they were on a kind of fringe and there was a Democratic leadership that kept them at arm's length. It appears that now there is no distance. There's no separation between the squad, the socialist wing, and you could call it the mainstream Democratic Party. If there's any differences at all, it's between the entire Democratic Party on the one side and maybe a Manchin and Sinema as outliers on the other side. So is it the case that the socialist left has taken over the Democratic Party? Is that what we're dealing with now?
Well, Dinesh, I think you're actually being too kind by calling them socialist. I've actually started calling them communist when I've read their bills and listened to the words they speak and seen how the policies and the tools and the manner they're willing to go about forcing their will on the American people. So if we take a much closer look, the so-called progressive group, which we know as the squad, is not a small group at all in Congress. It's actually progressives. There's 95 members in the Progressive Caucus. That's AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and the rest of them. And they are what the public perceives as the extremists, as the radicals in the Democrat Party. But no, you're absolutely right. That is the new identity of the Democrat Party. We call them the Communist Democrat Party. So you see, I used to call it socialism. I used to call them socialists, but I think that's too kind of a word. I think it's too soft because that's not who they really are. Bernie Sanders, we know, is a communist. And these people, all of the Democrats here in Congress, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, they have completely aligned themselves with communist Bernie Sanders. And they're bringing the Build Back Better agenda is not a Democrat agenda. It's actually a communist agenda. And it's Bernie Sanders' full presidential platform. And that's what we see in the infrastructure bill and the reconciliation budget. The Democrats are working so hard right now to force us to vote on. So it is important for the American public to understand, while the word socialism still sounds extreme to people like us, it's too kind and it's too soft of a word in describing Democrats, especially the Democrat Party of today.
I mean, if we can reflect on these, just those two words for a moment. I mean, socialism, by and large, refers to an economic philosophy of redistribution. But communism adds to that the element of political tyranny. That's what communist means. It's political tyranny tied to the socialist economic ideology. And we see, don't we, in many cases, that these Democrats fully approve of techniques that are classically associated with tyranny. They want to go after political dissenters. They want to shut down free speech. They want to, in fact, even direct the private sector to do what they are constitutionally prohibited from doing. So it seems to me that the word communist, although it might be used as just sort of a more extreme form of socialist, is actually clinically accurate in describing people who are advocates of political repression.
That's exactly right. And you described it perfectly. The word communist is, it sounds extreme to people and people are going, what? The Democrats aren't communists, but actually they are. Just like you said, I mean, look at vaccine mandates, for example. This is not something that we've ever had to deal with before, but we have the president of the United States forcing companies, private businesses, to force their employees and maybe even their customers to take vaccine against their will, or they're going to be fired from their job. And if the companies don't comply with the president of the United States mandating these vaccines, then the president of the United States is telling these companies, I'm going to fine you, huge fines. And so, yes, these are communist tactics, and they're not going to stop with vaccine mandates. We're going to see them coming even further. Look at the FBI. We have Biden actually weaponizing the FBI against parents just because they're holding their school boards accountable in the curriculum, the racist curriculum, CRT. And they're also holding their school boards accountable for putting boys in skirts in their daughters' bathrooms, where we just saw last week, two women were brutally raped by a teenage boy dressing like a girl. And so these are communist tactics. And I think it's so important, Dinesh, for us to start using this word and labeling Democrats appropriately for exactly who they are. And so that the American people can fully understand what we're dealing with, that hopefully Democrat voters that have voted Democrat all their life, just because their mom and dad and their grandparents were Democrat, can wake up and realize that this is not the Democrat Party of yesterday, that it's now a communist Democrat Party. And so that we can start pulling people in America away from this dangerous party and their radical ideas and get everyone back on track to put America first and make sure that we put our tax dollars and, of course, our children's future front and center, because that's what we're going to have to do to save our country.
When we come back, I want to ask Marjorie Taylor Greene about those tax dollars and the way in which they are being squandered by a Congress that is literally out of control. I also am going to ask her, where is the GOP on all this? We'll be right back. Nobody likes aches and pains, but they come to us all eventually, either from the normal wear and tear of time or from injury. But now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. Now, the vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more. Why? Because it works for them. Typically, advertisers send us products. Debbie and I try them. Debbie's been suffering from frozen shoulder for a couple of years now. So she decided to give it a try. She knows that if she doesn't take it regularly, the pain comes right back. So she's made a vow never to be without Relief Factor again. Being able to lift her arm and exercise, super important to her. And Relief Factor is a tool that Debbie needs, and she's glad she has it. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. I'm back with Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, and we're talking about Congress and the Biden administration. Marjorie, you've been tweeting out that your experience in Congress over the past 9 months, it's almost like as a businesswoman showing up in Washington, you can hardly believe what you're seeing, this out of control body that supposedly not only represents us, but represents our superior wisdom. I mean, the idea of representative democracy is that we, the people, can select representatives wiser than ourselves to make decisions. Can you describe just what seems to be this experience of just sheer horror at the way in which these people are treating the public purse?
Yeah, sheer horror is an accurate description, Dinesh. For me, I'm constantly appalled and disgusted at how unqualified people are in Congress. And it's no wonder that we're nearly $30 trillion in debt and literally on the verge of driving straight off of a cliff. Working here in Congress for me has been a hard reality, like a slap in the face as to why our country is broken. It's because Congress doesn't work. It's completely dysfunctional. And these people here in Washington, D.C. couldn't accomplish a single task if you just asked them to do one simple thing. Where we have American men and women all over the country working so hard every day, achieving incredible things, making a profit and not a loss, able to serve their customers and serve their customers well, come up with great ideas, incredible products, inventions, ideas, and, you know, services that are wonderful for the American people and their customers. But yet we have United States members of Congress that literally can't function. They can't keep a schedule. They can't pass a bill that isn't crammed full of horrible ideas and excessive spending, like $25 million for desert fish, $200 million for Nancy Pelosi's slush fund, a national park that's filled up with some of the most accomplished and wealthiest people and businesses in the United States, when it already has $403 million in the trust fund. She needs $200 million more taxpayer dollars. I mean, these are the kinds of ridiculous ideas. And then you come down to insane things like instead of getting rid of the draft, no, they decide that we need to draft our daughters because we should just be able to draft women equally to men. And that makes no sense. The ideas that are discussed back and forth on the floor of Congress are ideas that do not serve the American people. They're ideas that don't make any sense and serve the rest of the world first and America last. I mean, right now we have China testing nuclear space missiles, and no one's paying attention. Our border is wide open, and it's created a national security crisis when we just pulled out of Afghanistan and armed an Islamic radical terrorist nation, the Taliban. So we have an administration completely out of control. We have skyrocketing crime, skyrocketing inflation. We were energy independent a year ago, and now we have Joe Biden telling OPEC to pump more oil so that they can gouge us at the gas pump. And so every single day for me walking around here in Washington, D.C. and in the halls of Congress, it makes me so disgusted because I came from a world where we accomplished everything we set out to do. And we took pride, and my company still does, we take pride in doing a job well done. And Congress can't even tie their shoes in the morning without standing up and tripping over and falling on their face. And who is hurt out of all of this is the American people who were forced to pay taxes to fund it all. And so Congress walks around with an elitist mentality as if they are more intelligent, as if they know better than the American people, and as if their ideas are actually going to solve problems when it's their very ideas that are creating all of the problems. And so I'm always frustrated and I'm willing to call it out every single time because I truly wish the American people could see the things that I see every single day and they just would not tolerate it anymore.
You know, when I was studying Obama for some of my earlier works, I noticed something interesting about him. And I'm only mentioning him because I'm asking you whether he's part of a wider phenomenon. Here's a guy, for example, who was a mediocre student, but was coddled throughout school and throughout college. Here's a guy who tried to go into the business world, was a complete failure, never wrote a scholarly article, never really created a product that anybody wants. But then it occurred to me that he's not talented in that way, right? But I wouldn't say that he's stupid or inept, because he's actually very cunning. He knows how to sow the seeds of resentment. He's a con man. So he has talents. They're not really what you and I would normally call talents, but this is what gets him ahead. He's able to play the victim card. He's able to set one group against another. So is it the case that these people in Congress who can't tie their shoelaces are nevertheless very good at ripping off the public purse, conning their supporters? They obviously have to get money every year to run for office, so they must be good at those things. But what you're saying is that they're not good for the American people.
Right. Well, they're typical of what we call sales weasels or snake oil salesmen, right? If you're good at selling something, you can sell anything. You can sell a car that doesn't work. You can sell a TV that's going to break. You can sell a refrigerator that's broken. And you can sell ideas to the American people that are going to cause America to fail. That's what Barack Obama did. And that's what the Democrats do. They figured out the system. They know the right words to use. And they work very hard in think tanks to come up with the right words and descriptions of policies that are really lies. And this is what they do. Once they come up with these terms and names, they go out to the public and they sell these terms and these names and these ideas. And then they convince everyone through great sales techniques that these are the ideas and the words and the names that are really going to help their lives and make everything easier for them. And that they're the people that are helping them most because they're the people that care the most. And you see, all that takes is a little bit of skill in sales. And I would argue that that's what Obama's talent really was, is selling. There's people that are so talented at selling in the private sector, and they usually make a lot of money selling products and services. And so Obama, had he have been out there selling used cars, he probably would have done really great and sold a lot of used cars to Nash. But instead, he became a true snake oil salesman, and he sold a lot of lies to the American people. He sowed seeds of division and destruction in our country, and the Democrat Party has completely fallen in line, because this is honestly who they've always been. It's just that now their communist membership card shows when they speak. They can't hide it anymore. And so what we have to do is continue to expose exactly what their words and descriptions and their labels actually mean on these policies. And they truly do mean communism, and they mean the destruction of the America that we've grown up in and that we know and love. So it takes bold action. And that's why I'm constantly pushing my colleagues in the GOP conference. We have to be stronger. We have to be more serious. We have to have a plan, and we have to fight harder if we want our Republican voters and donors to continue to support us.
I think that's absolutely true. At a time when even many Republicans appear a little confused or shell-shocked by what the Democrats are doing, I think you're a voice of just calling it like it is. And you do it in such a such an interesting and in a manner that compels attention. So your critics go insane. But you're, I think, playing an important role in waking up the Republican Party, which, after all, is the only party capable of putting up some organized resistance to the stuff we're seeing. Marjorie Taylor Greene, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dinesh.
Inflation is already running hot, right at the highs of the last couple of decades, and now the Democrats are pushing through another massive spending plan. They want $3.5 trillion. So here's the deal. If you think money grows on trees like our government does, well, keep living in ignorance. But if you're freaked out as I am about the impact this additional spending is going to have on already high inflation, then protect your savings now. Diversify a portion of your savings into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. If you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. I appeared on Fox News last night, the Ingram Angle, to talk about a really amusing, well, interesting case coming out of Harvard. This involves a woman named Kyla Golding, I believe is her last name, a Harvard student and now a Harvard dropout. So the question becomes, how did Harvard student go to dropping out of Harvard? Well, this young woman tells us, and I'm now going to read a couple of her lines. She's suffused with rage, and I can only give you a glimpse of it. Quote, she says, I took an inorganic chemistry exam on the very same day that a grand jury failed to charge two police officers with the murder of Breonna Taylor. So she's actually trying to describe why she had a really hard time taking this chemistry exam. She goes, quote, that day my body inhaled molecules of white supremacy as they seeped out of my computer from that proctored Zoom room. They entered my bloodstream and catalyzed a metabolism that would allow for the invasion of my body by a violently infectious life form. Wow. She's really getting into it. And then she goes on, the exam began, and she basically, you know, is a dud at the exam. And she goes, the exam began, and I haven't been able to show up mentally or emotionally in the science class since. So what she's really saying is that white supremacy, this virus of white supremacy, which kind of came at her from the news of Breonna Taylor's case, made it her unable not only to do that exam, but to function emotionally or intellectually. And now she says she's basically decided to heal by quitting Harvard. Quote, sometimes it looks like distancing ourselves from potentially toxic or infectious scenarios or spaces to protect our energy and safeguard it for our own well-being. Now, this is a little bit strange because how is she protecting herself from, let's just say, the public news out there by getting out of Harvard? Let's remember that the white supremacy she's describing didn't occur at Harvard. So this is kind of why Fox calls me, and I think I'm the leading diagnostician in the country of these sorts of ailments. And very often I find, given my medical experience, that the ailment as described by the patient is completely different. The source of it is totally different than the stated reason. The stated reason here, I think, is not that hard to figure out. In fact, the stated reason has been obvious now for three decades. It was obvious when I was a student at Dartmouth. It's affirmative action. It is what is called the affirmative action mismatch, a term that I attribute to the economist Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell basically said that a lot of kids who get into these top schools, they're not dumb. They're not stupid kids. They actually are average kids. They would actually do fine in a lot of other institutions. But what's happened is you could almost call it the Peter principle. They have been promoted to their level of incompetence. So they have been essentially given so much preferences that they come to a college cognitively behind the other students by what, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. They don't know a whole lot of stuff that the other kids know. So they step into class. Now, the colleges know this, by the way. They've been very clever. So they've set up all these kind of easy, ridiculous courses, you know, Afro-American studies and this kind of thing. So there is room for black kids. And this is a female black student we're talking about, Kyla Golding. She could easily have gone to Afro-American studies and then she could basically spout off stuff like this, you know, my body inhaled molecules of whites. I mean, that's an A right there. You know, this kind of rabid rhetoric is welcomed in a field that essentially has virtually no intellectual standards, not even at Harvard. So, but instead of taking black studies or gay studies or women's studies, what does this woman do? She probably listened to all the propaganda from the Harvard people. You're a genius. You know, you're bringing a value, diverse perspective. Take inorganic chemistry. Whoa. Then she goes into the class, goes into the exam. Ah, I can't do it. All these other kids are writing furiously. They're all doing so well. So, and she can't give the reason. She can't say, listen, I really don't deserve to be here. I've been given all these preferences. I'm competitively outmatched. I need help. I need remedial education. I need added. She can't say any of it. She has to blame white supremacy. Now, the second part I want to mention, which is to me even kind of more amusing than all this, is the fact that she has to experience this victimization vicariously. No one actually does anything to her. No one insults her. No one does know. She can't identify any racism at Harvard. Why? Because actually, far from being white supremacy, Harvard has black supremacy. Far from having rules that benefit whites, they have rules that benefit blacks and Hispanics against whites and Asians. So there's no white supremacy to be found. So she experiences it vicariously. It's kind of like, what's happening to Breonna Taylor magically enters my soul and I can't function. It's kind of like me if I was in college and I go, listen, you know, I really can't do this test because, I mean, there are slum kids in India who just get one meal a day. How do you expect me to take my exam in philosophy here when that's going on in the slums of Mumbai? Or I just came from a screening of Slumdog Millionaire. I'm so traumatized. I can't function in school. I mean, this would be ludicrous. My friends would laugh their heads off. This is just excuse making. And a lot of what's going on, critical race theory, if you look at it, 90% of it is excuse making. It's taking people who are competitively, they can't cut it, they can't do it, and it gives them elaborate reasons. Oh, it's structural racism. Oh yeah, you know, you can't see it. That's because it's not overt, it's covert. Ultimately, what they're doing is reconciling people, in a sense, to their own ineptitude. Have you ever browsed the internet in incognito mode? It's not as incognito as you think. And why would it be? Incognito mode is a Google product, and Google has made its fortune by tracking your movements online. There's even a $5 billion class action lawsuit against the company in California where it's accused of secretly collecting user data. Google's defense, incognito doesn't mean invisible. So how do you actually make yourself as invisible as possible online? Well, you use ExpressVPN like I do. Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked and data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. One of these data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address is masked. It's super easy to use. Just tap one button and you're protected. And if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/Dinesh. You'll get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh. Go to expressvpn.com/Dinesh. The New York City Council wants to take down a 7-foot statue of Thomas Jefferson that has that sits right in front of City Hall and kind of towers over you as you walk into City Hall. Now, this is the same outfit that voted to remove the Theodore Roosevelt statue from the entrance of the American Museum of Natural History earlier this year. And so you see what's going on here is these aren't the Antifa people who are yanking down the statues in a kind of lawless fashion. This is the city itself, driven here, by the way, by some left-wing Black and Latino and apparently even Asian activists, saying, in effect, that Jefferson was a racist and we've got to take down the statue. Now, I did a series on Jefferson a week or two ago on this podcast, and I showed that Jefferson is not a racist. Jefferson had suspicions that he sort of was candid about in notes on the state of Virginia, but a suspicion is not an ideology. A suspicion is essentially, I suspect. It's kind of like saying, I suspect this guy did it. Doesn't mean that he did it. Doesn't mean that I'm even accusing him of it. It means that I simply have a doubt in my mind. Jefferson was a slave owner, as were most Southern planters of his day. this practice of slavery, let's remember, went back to the early 17th century. It was 150 years from the sort of origins of America to the founding, and slavery had been embedded in America. Here's Jefferson, by the way, talking about it. He says, this is from the Summary View, "The abolition of domestic slavery is the great object of desire in those colonies where it was unhappily introduced in their infant state." Here's Jefferson saying, well, yeah, you know what? It's slavery is actually the way agriculture is done in the South. Yeah, I'm doing it. Lots of other people are doing it. But that doesn't mean we approve of this practice. We recognize it is now a kind of embedded feature of American life, particularly of the South. But this is something that the British inflicted on us. And what Jefferson is saying, very strikingly, is that the colonies, and he doesn't just mean the northern colonies, he means all the colonies, would rather be rid of it. And he himself was willing to play a role in that. Here's Abraham Lincoln on Jefferson. And I don't think Abraham Lincoln's credentials can be doubted as an anti-slavery man. Lincoln says of Jefferson that, quote, "He was, is, and perhaps will continue to be." See how prophetic Lincoln is here. "Perhaps will continue to be." It's almost as if Lincoln is anticipating that there might be a change in future generations, the most distinguished politician of our history. And by that, I think Lincoln, in a sense, meant to include himself. He's saying of all the politicians in American history, of all the founders, including Washington, who, by the way, did free his slaves on his death, or Madison, who didn't, or Franklin, who didn't own slaves, Lincoln is saying that Jefferson is the top guy. He's number one. So it's not surprising that Jefferson was a slave owner. What is surprising is that a man who was a slave owner condemned slavery in the cadence of a biblical prophet. What is surprising is that a man who was a slave owner nevertheless wrote, "All men are created equal," which has been a charter of subsequent generations. Lincoln appealed to it. Martin Luther King appealed to it. So essentially, the unfolding of a kind of pattern of emancipation in American history made possible by Thomas Jefferson and his grand declaration. So the Jefferson statue is not intended to hide the ambiguity of Jefferson's life. In fact, if you look at leaders in general, you will find ambiguities in pretty much all of them. You'll find ambiguities in Lincoln. You'll find ambiguities in Winston Churchill. But this does not actually diminish their heroism. They're remembered for the thing that they did that was great. And there was a thing that Jefferson did that was great and is great and has proven itself to be great. And so here you have Jefferson, this kind of mammoth figure, a kind of Gulliver, and he's being pulled down and tied down by these moral Lilliputians, these little clowns that sort of are not of his own stature, are not even really in a position to evaluate him, don't have any understanding of the circumstances that Jefferson dealt with. And nevertheless, what they can do later, generations later, is pull this man's statue down in an act of, I think, vengeance and profound stupidity. When you get Verizon or AT&T or T-Mobile, you're often paying for their political and social initiatives. Well, stop paying for their thousands of retail stores across the country that you never go into. Pure Talk doesn't charge you for any of that fluff. Instead, they give you excellent 5G coverage on the same 5G network as one of those big guys. That's right. With Pure Talk, the average family saves over $800 a year. I made the switch and you should too. You can keep your number, keep your phone, or get huge discounts on the latest iPhones and Androids. I got this Apple 12 from them. Get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. Wow. And listen, if you still want unlimited data, no problem. You can still get it and still save a lot of money. Go to puretalk.com and shop for the plan that's right for you. They have a 30-day risk-free guarantee, so you literally have nothing to lose. Go to puretalk.com and enter promo code SAVEHALF, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That's puretalk.com, promo code SAVEHALF. Pure Talk is simply smarter wireless. I'm in the middle of reading an interesting book by Roy Baumeister. It's about evil and violence and cruelty. It's about perpetrators and victims. And since we live in an age of, you know, purported victimization, we talk about victimization not just in society, but in history, historical victimization. This is a very insightful book. I was actually referred to the book by Rob Henderson, whose newsletter I get, and who actually provides excellent summaries of these kinds of books. And as I was been reading the book, I was thinking of a very, to me, a memorable scene from the movie Goodfellas, where Joe Pesci, who's kind of an up-and-coming gangster, comes into a bar where there's a kind of old mafia guy there, an older man who is jovial, has had probably too many drinks. And he reminds Joe Pesci that when Joe Pesci was a young kid, he used to shine everybody's shoes, and he has a nickname based upon being kind of the shoe shine guy. And Joe Pesci, who is obviously now an adult and obviously has a sense of dignity, gets offended. And he says, well, I used to do that when I was a kid, but, I don't do that anymore. So, don't bring that up. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, you're right. You've outgrown that. You don't do that anymore. Shine my shoes, So this guy wounds Joe Pesci's pride. And then Joe Pesci leaves, returns with a baseball bat, and he with his buddies then essentially kills this guy. And so here you have an act of, shocking, wanton cruelty and violence. And the question becomes, what provoked it? How did this take place? How can we look in the minds of both the victim and the perpetrator to see who's responsible for this? Now, on the face of it, it seems like Joe Pesci is entirely the bad guy. This is a guy who has obviously a violent streak. He was probably born with a violent streak. He's just bad through and through. And the other guy, well, He just had a few too many drinks. He was just making a joke. It's not a big deal. But what this book shows by Roy Baumeister, and he doesn't discuss this particular incident. I'm actually using his lens to interpret the incident. When you look more closely, you realize that the line between the perpetrator and the victim is less obvious. First of all, it becomes clear through the movie that in many respects, Joe Pesci is, although a gangster, a perfectly normal guy. He is very affectionate. He's a kind of a family man. He makes jokes. He's kind-hearted. He's large-hearted in many ways. So what happens here is that he had a weak point. And the weak point was his dignity, his sense that he's accomplished something in life. Now, the other guy, the older guy, knew this. And the older guy was, in a sense, rubbing, you may say, salt into the sore. He recognized that the way to insult Joe Pesci is to bring up the fact that this guy used to be a kind of a degraded, shoe polish guy. And when Joe Pesci even kind of tried to warn him, listen, you're upsetting me, like, don't go there. This guy's like, yeah, I'm going to go there. And in fact, it turns out that this guy thought he had a kind of immunity because he's a, quote, made mafia man. He can't be touched. And in the end, actually, Joe Pesci pays for his life for, quote, touching him because the mafia essentially wreaks its revenge. So I mention all of this simply to say that by and large, when we look at comic books, when we look at movies, particularly these kind of superhero, supervillain movies, you've got bad guys and they're bad. And why are they bad? Well, we don't know why they're bad. They're always bad. Badness is who defines them. And then you have good guys, Superman, Batman, and they're good. And there's no reason why they're good. They're just good. And so you have this kind of clear-cut line between the good guys and the bad guys. And the reason that this is dangerous, according to Roy Baumeister, is this. We all have it within ourselves. And I regard this to be, by the way, a deeply Christian insight. We all have it within ourselves to do great good and terrible evil. So the line between good and evil runs like right through the human heart. And the best way that you can prevent yourself from doing evil is to know this, is to recognize that the evil is not out there. It's not somehow in the bad guy who was born that way is irremediable. No, evil is suppressed by good people exercising self-control over the evil that's inside of them. So you see how important it is for us to learn to do that, and how important it is for moral education to encompass that, and how important it is for society to reinforce that. Now, all of this is really important because it is not only the perpetrator. Very often perpetrators have rationalizations for what they did. I'm sure in this case, Joe Pesci's rationalization was, listen, that guy, you know, he really hurt my feelings. He profoundly hurt my feelings. And that was a wound no less real than the wounds I inflicted on him. So very rarely do criminals and perpetrators say, I'm evil. I did it because I'm evil. It just gave me great pleasure to do it. There may be rare exceptional cases with that, but on most cases, you find that the perpetrator has a reason, a rationalization. This is what made me do it. And that's the key point. Perpetrators try to avoid responsibility by claiming that something made them do it. Now, one of the most insightful things in this book is the victims, because we tend to believe victims. We tend to believe victims are innocent. We tend to believe victims don't in any sense deserve what's coming to them. The victim was just there and was victimized. And again, there are cases where that is so. A young woman is just walking out, walking home from the movie theater, and she's attacked, assaulted, and so on. Obviously, she's a completely innocent victim. But in many other cases, in fact, in the majority of cases, says Roy Baumeister, and he's not afraid to go into taboo areas. He goes into areas like domestic violence. He goes into domestic violence very often. There's a history of abuse, of mockery, of mutual insults, of both sides lashing out at each other in various ways. And very often the domestic violence comes on top of that. So domestic violence doesn't come out of nowhere. I just take pleasure in beating people. No, the domestic violence is, in a sense, from the point of view of the perpetrator, provoked by some deep wound, sometimes an emotional wound, sometimes a physical wound. But the victim, in that case, tends to then disavow their responsibility for doing any of that, pretends like, I was just here, I was victimized. And really what Roy Baumeister is saying is, again, none of us are innocent in this way, where we're completely free. You know, we are wronged, and we have had no complicity whatsoever in the wrongdoing. In the vast majority of human interactions, the situation is complex. This is not, by the way, to excuse the perpetrator. The perpetrator is to blame. A rationalization is not the same as a justification. A rationalization, as in this case of the movie, Joe Pesci was not justified in killing that guy. He should have actually licked his wounds and gone home and gotten over it, maybe had a drink and forgotten about it, let it go. But no, he couldn't let it go. And so what you see here, I think, is a very revealing window into the evil that resides, I think, very broadly in the human heart.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.